Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analytics hour. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 51. More and more, the function of digital analytics is being tackled by teams. And that's great. But there's still a lot of people out there working on a team of one within their organization. And truth be told, most of you have been around for a while, started out that way too. So on this show, we look up from our hub and spoke center of excellence ivory tower, and we talk about the team of one. Since Tim and I are so far removed from these days, we sought out the person furthest away in the world of whom this was true, and we found our guest. Her name is Mo Kiss, and today she's the product analyst at The Iconic, where she also heads up the digital analytics function. Prior to that, she was a senior analyst at Datalicious. Welcome, Mo. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Awesome. Tim, how you doing? You've actually met Mo in person on all your travels this year, right?
This year and last year as well.
So. Oh, nice.
Unfortunately.
Thank you, Mo, for pressing past that obvious.
Is that your perspective? Obviously awkward. She's working with the government right now to see if we can stop that from happening ever again.
There you go. That's right. Tim Wilson added to Australian no-fly list. I don't know if that's a thing. Well, Mo, for our listeners, could you give us a brief introduction and maybe just a little bit about your role at The Iconic today?
Sure. So I'm actually pretty new to digital analytics. I actually came to the industry from government. I worked for the Australian government prior to that. And basically one of the reasons I ended up in the industry is because both my sister and my future brother-in-law work in analytics. And when I looked to move career-wise, I realized what an amazing community was. And that's sort of how I ended up here. So I now work at a company in Australia called The Iconic. It's the biggest online fashion retailer in Australia. And we get sort of 10 million visits per month. Having said that, we just celebrated our 5-year anniversary, which means we are still really young. And our company is actually, in terms of our workforce, is very young. So 80% of our staff are under 35, which I actually love because it means we have this really enthusiastic and let's try anything type of workforce. So it's actually a really contagious energy and office to be in, which makes being an analytics person in the building really good fun.
So what kinds of tools are you using and how are they used by you and others within the organization? Because I think that's something that, you know, a lot of people try to figure out is sort of what's the right tool set when you're the only person kind of owning and running that function.
Well, I actually think a really good analyst, and while I am the only person that looks after digital analytics really at The Iconic, we certainly have lots of different types of analysts. I really think they should be tool agnostic, and everyone certainly has their favorites. I'm a person that uses whatever will make my job faster and easier. So I use R, I use Tableau, SQL, Excel, Google Analytics. We also have Snowplow and Adjust. Actually, one thing that I do want to do is sort of clean up the tools that we have and make sure that we're really getting lots of value and the maintenance is really up to date on all of them. But I really think as an analyst, you need to be able to learn anything. And that's one of the reasons that I love my job is that I get to learn new tools all the time.
I think there are lots of one-person shops that are actually using Excel and Google Analytics or Excel and Adobe Analytics. And one of the things where it seems like you're not necessarily kind of the typical, although be happy to get feedback from people who say, no, absolutely, I'm a one-person digital analytics team as well, is that you are kind of going to sort of the level two tools. And we've had the discussions before about is the US ahead or behind? Like every country seems like it feels like they're behind. Every time I'm traveling to Europe or Australia, I start to feel like maybe the US from the tools adoption is behind. But when you came to so you guys have a BI team that's got like how many people are in the BI group?
About six.
And Were they, are all outside of the web analytics, you guys are a GA, well, GA and Google Analytics and Snowplow basically are your main web analytics stuff. Is that right?
Yeah. So we use GA primarily sort of for the marketers and the product team to, you know, answer those really easy questions or like those questions that they can self-serve. And we implemented Snowplow to really let us customize some of the things that we wanted to track, but also to answer much more complex questions. And that's where really needing to know SQL and sort of using our being able to connect to our data warehouse, which our amazing data team built, is super important as well.
So when it comes to things like Tableau and R and the SQL and the data warehouse, were those all platforms that were in existence at the Iconic when you joined, or did you have to, were some of those ones where you said there's a gap based on what I'm being asked to do, I need to go grab another tool? Like, were you glomming on to other tools already being used, or were you adding ones yourself?
So I was really fortunate at Datalicious, the last agency I was at. I actually had the opportunity to learn R and also Tableau and had a bit of a play with sort of BigQuery and things like that as well. So when I joined the Iconic, I already had a pretty good foundation, definitely still learning though. But Tableau was definitely on its way to being implemented with our data warehouse. But as for R, that's actually something I'm trying to teach the rest of the analysts in the building at the moment. And we just had a session last week because, like I said, we are a young company. And so we've evolved so quickly that sometimes our analytic practice hasn't moved at the pace that it needs to. And we are sort of replicating efforts and we need to find a way to automate, basically, and R really lets us do that. So at the moment, we're sort of on a path to automate as much as possible, and I see R being really instrumental in that.
Okay, I think we're done. So R is awesome. Let's just stop right there.
Yeah, I've definitely drunk the Kool-Aid.
R is fine, and now that I've got more and more people on my team using it as well, and now I'm slowly being sucked into its orbit. So yeah, no, I think R is awesome.
I feel like this is atypical. Like from your intro, Michael, you know, saying teams, and I think we've had this discussion in the past, in the more distant past, where it was, hey, we're working with huge organizations. They have teams of analysts. And I always have to say, not really. Like I've got a client that's got an enormous amount of online revenue, and they've got one full-time digital analyst, and they had none for an 11-month stretch. So I don't think it's that uncommon to have a single analyst, even at large organizations. But in those cases, those people are really scrambling just to keep the lights on and try to, you know, produce some kind of recurring dashboards. But then when I talk to people, you know, more locally or at conferences when they're sole operations, I don't often get that there's that much of kind of an awareness and drive to say, we've got to automate all this stuff. We've got to bring in other tools. We've got to collaborate with other groups in the organization so we're all on the same page. I mean, I think there's enormous value in that. I don't know, Michael, what your sense is from, you know, the, you know, clients and non-clients and just other analysts, whether what Mo's describing at the Iconic to me almost feels kind of atypical from what I feel like I've run into.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's aspects of it. I mean, you know, just the way you describe, Mo, kind of the environment and kind of the people, a lot of times, at least, you know, in my experience, and again, you know, we kind of go back a few years before my experience becomes relevant again, but the issue was that it was organizations who weren't progressing with analytics that weren't investing in the people. So then you're kind of stuck with one person in a room with old tools without a lot of ability to kind of move them forward. So I like the contrast in paradigm because it sounds really exciting what's going on where you're at. And so, you know, it's more like there's momentum building behind this. And in reality, it sounds like, you know, it may not be long before there's other digital analysts that become part of this to help drive these things forward. So I don't know what your perspective is on that or if you have one, Mo, but it's interesting.
Well, I was actually chatting to Krista from Google about this the other day because she's just spent some time in Asia working with a lot of sort of Australasian clients. And I do think, and obviously my experience is much more limited and I haven't, you know, spent time working in the US, but I feel like Australian businesses missed an analytics step that the US companies went through, which was really sort of like GA and Adobe UI focused, sort of, yeah, going through that, you know, Excel and hitting limits on the number of rows. And we just kind of have skipped that and gone straight from, oh, okay, this is what analytics is, yep, we should care about it, to trying to do much more advanced things. And that's, you know, the business requirements are more advanced. But because of that, our skill set has adapted to those more advanced techniques because we've had to, because we kind of didn't know about the intermediary step, if that makes sense.
That, yeah, that totally makes sense. And that's, I guess that seems like it's the curse of the first mover or something. I guess this is getting me, like, this is causing me anxiety with the American analysts who are kind of working in Excel, and even the American based companies that are trying to, the platforms that are saying, how can we support Excel more, or how can we build stuff into our web interface to make it more robust? That's leaving people in a comfort zone they probably shouldn't be in.
And I think where that might start to become a real problem is one of the most powerful things that I've noticed with things like R and Tableau and SQL is the ability to join data sets. And like for us, that's super important to join our digital analytics data with our order and sales data. And we just, you can't do that in Excel. Like we have too much traffic, we have too many orders. And I think when businesses realize what's possible by using some of these newer tools, there might be that appetite to actually upskill their staff.
Or I wonder if that's where we talk about sometimes that kind of traditional consultancies that have done, you know, business consulting, management consulting are kind of starting to light up on analytics, if whether they'll be coming in with a little bit more of a view of the web analytics data is just, see, now I'm saying data. So I'm, ah, man.
Data.
So I'll be dropping a book here.
Data.
That, I don't know. That's probably a big, much broader discussion as sort of the future of the industry. But the whole skip to step actually makes a whole lot of sense. That's actually, hadn't thought of it that way. And that absolutely seems like it could be the explanation.
Well, and it also sounds like you're going to where you need to go. And in a certain sense, there's almost even sort of a little bit of evolution that's happened in terms of the understanding of analytics from a digital perspective over the last 10 years. And so a lot of people, you know, when I was a one person team, it was web trends and, you know, a handy dandy ODBC connector, which you could export into, you know, tools like Excel. And getting data joined or integrated was certainly a good idea, but it was awfully hard. And there are a number of tools now that weren't there available then that I wonder if just helps elevate that and gives better options kind of in a way. I mean, I know the tools are better today, so I think that's kind of true. So I might have just said something really sort of obvious. How was it for you, Mo, 10 years ago when you could only work with the old tools versus now when you can only... No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I do want to have a basic question. Tableau, you picked up at Datalicious. When it comes to another sort of, I think, challenge that sometimes happens is the asking for stuff, asking for, can I get this tool? Now, R is nice because it's, you can get rolling on R with no expense, and it's only when you need to start getting stuff up on servers that you need to pay. But was there any pushback for you if you came in and said, hey, to do this efficiently, I need Tableau? Did you have to build a case or any other tool? Or is it kind of the mode of recognized, kind of the enlightened, hey, that's relatively low expense. If this person we hired as an expert says they need it, we can get it.
So at the Iconic, I'm actually both blessed and cursed that we have both a founder and a managing director who is a former consultant and analyst, and also a CEO with a very analytical background, which means that as a business, if we put forward something that we need to help us with analysis, it's definitely supportive. What I'm actually working on at the moment, though, is that I think we're actually getting the balance wrong. And that old saying that I probably heard on your podcast at some point about the 80-20 rule, like you should spend 80% of your analytics budget on people and 20% on tools, I think is pretty accurate. And I'm not sure at the Iconic we have that balance right yet. So I'm about to ask for something which could, you know, tip the scales a bit and be a little bit more difficult to put the case forward, because at the moment asking for the tools is really easy.
You're going to ask for a clone of yourself?
No, I will ask for someone much better than myself.
Okay.
No, that's, I think that's good. And actually, you just touched on something that I think we could expand upon, and other people who kind of are on an individual team, I think, could get a lot from, which is that question of how do you best build your skill set? And you mentioned that you have leadership that's kind of analytical by nature and has background there, but certainly digital analytics as a discipline, as well as sort of, you know, kind of some of the newer things that are happening in that space, you need the ability to kind of learn, find new things. What are the ways you found to kind of stay current? I mean, when I started, it was, I just read every blog that I could find, but that's no Both longer. No, I, hey, back when there was a Google Reader, okay, Google, yeah. I had 120 odd different analytics blogs that I had cobbled together, some of which had never, hadn't been updated for years, but I would read any blog I could find. But I, that's not today's trend. Well, blogs aren't kind of the way people get to information. So what are you seeing in terms of what's been keeping you up to speed and giving you new insights or skills in terms of growing your skill set?
So for me, like I said, I'm still learning R and SQL and Tableau. I definitely need to improve just because all of our data sits in there now and there's so much more we can do. At this stage, I have capped it at like, okay, why don't I focus on these three things? Because they're all quite different and complex and have their own nuances. So at this stage, I'm kind of not trying to focus on the new shiny object and just be like, these are the three things I really need to focus on, because if I nail them, then there's not a lot of things that I can't do, essentially. But ultimately for me, the biggest way that I stay up to date with what's going on is the analytics community. Like, if you just jump in Measure Slack, like, people are always telling you what's new and you can sort of read and go, okay, I should check out that blog, or maybe this one I can skip, that sort of thing. But it is something, as a one-stop shop, I guess, I'm finding difficult is how do you keep up with the workload and also find the time to upskill yourself and continue to develop. It's definitely a balance.
So how I think that is like the top three challenges for every analyst, because there's always more work you could do. So do you have any, like, you know, some people have checklists or they commit that the first, you know, I'm not that kind of person, first 30 minutes every day, I'm going to just catch up on blogs. Do you have anything like formalized that you're saying not a day is going to go by that I don't check something out, or I don't know?
I used to block out 3 hours every Friday when I was really starting out with R and I kind of wanted to hit my head against a wall, which I often did. But now I'm at a stage where I just say, okay, I know that there's an easy way to do this, and that easy way is normally like pivoting some data in Excel. My way to keep learning is to be like, I know that it would be faster to do that, but I'm going to push back, take a little bit more time to do it, and I'm going to force myself to use SQL or use R or use Tableau, even though I might be able to answer that question faster if I used Excel, just so that because otherwise, you know, you've got to put to practice what you're trying to learn. And I think that's the best way to do it. Well, that's what's working for me.
That's like, it's good advice, I think, for any analyst, no matter what.
Yeah, what absolutely.
Got to figure out a way to keep pushing yourself, to even if it's harder or a little slower, if you know there's going to be ultimate benefit. So I'm doing that myself. I wish it was only 3 hours on a Friday afternoon and I was managed to make headway with R. But you're going to learn R this weekend, right? Right, Michael?
I do 15 minutes every Tuesday.
It's R next Tuesday, Python the next Tuesday. You're just going to Tableau the Tuesday after that.
No, it's why I haven't learned anything in 2 years.
Well, but just to clarify, you said three things, and I don't think you were being, did you list what those, that's Tableau, R, and one other SQL. Thing, or you were just speaking, and SQL. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's kind of on the technical tools, efficiency, and kind of more power side of things. I mean, it seems like it could easily be a one-person shop saying, I've got plenty of technical skills, but while I'm not communicating, I need to really focus on learning the business, or how am I going to do that? I'm going to once a week go, you know, pick a different product manager, or pick, you know, and try to go to lunch once a week with somebody who can teach me about the business, or, you know, working on communication or presentation mm-hmm. skills. But it does seem like it's tough it can be tough if you're not highly internally motivated, and I struggle with people who aren't highly internally motivated. So maybe that's the end of it. You know, the people who look for give me my path forward. Like, it doesn't sound like any of yours has been top down driven. You're a one person show at a role that you're in many ways the only role. You're not, it's not like the HR department at the Iconic is going to, you know, pull out the career pathing document for you and lay out that, you know, your goals for this year should be to learn X, Y, and Z. Like, you've got to kind of take that and own it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. My immediate boss actually kind of, like many people, fell into analytics, but at our company, and this is, I think, actually one of the unfortunate things about skipping that middle digital analytics wave, is that digital analytics doesn't seem to have the same, what's the word for it? Like, the same level of importance that it might in the US, in that a lot of Australian companies, and the Iconic is one of them, treats it as just another data set that we will use to answer questions, which is great, but it's also something that needs to have an owner. And being an owner of digital analytics is a full-time job. Like, it is huge. But at our company, it's just part of one of many things. So having a boss who doesn't necessarily play in that space, I really do have to drive sort of what my learnings are going to be and my KPIs. And the way I think about it is, do I want to have a job in 5 or 10 years? Okay, well, you know, you can see what's trending, like where the direction that we're going in. So how do I make sure that I've got the skills that I need in 5 or 10 years to have a job?
So are you the owner of the, it's interesting thinking of it as a data set, which is, I mean, it's fair, right? It's like, you've got your customer data, you've got your web analytics data.
Yep.
Are you the owner of the data set? Are you responsible for the, I mean, not necessarily pushing, well, I don't know. Are you guys using your GA premium and you've got Google Tag Manager? Is that right?
Yes. Yep.
So where does your responsibility, are you doing stuff in GTM? Are you speccing out tags and somebody else is doing stuff in GTM? Like,
yes.
Does that fall? So are you the data set owner? Because I think that's kind of,
yes,
common.
I do own the data set. However, I'm also really lucky because most of our developers along the way have had to really upskill. So basically, when we want to deploy new tags or tracking, like we just launched a new Android app, I'll work really closely with the developers, and I actually sit with engineering quite a bit to sort of enable this, because I'll map out exactly what things I want tracked and how to do it. And then they just go in and, you know, do the actual physical setup for me, which is great. And then I'll work with QA to test that all those tags are firing correctly.
So, but I want to be really clear because I'm curious. When you say you spec out so there's, on the one extreme would be, hey, I want to track every screen and every one of these actions, and
yes,
vague, and you hand it off. Another more detailed would be, these are all the screens. This is the tracking that I want applied, and you hand it off and they figure it out. The next level would be, I've looked at how the SDK works and the documentation for doing this in an app, and I'm providing not necessarily final code, but directional code stuff. Like, where on that spectrum do you, because the more detailed you get, the more time and more knowledge you have to have of,
yeah,
the implementation, and where are you on that spectrum?
So I definitely go through like the SDK and instructions and whatnot. I wouldn't say like I'm the final for the code, but I definitely do sit and help sort of define rules as the devs are writing the code.
And then are you actually doing the work in GTM? I mean, they're putting stuff in a data layer and you're doing stuff in GTM?
It can be
GTM.
Either or. It can be either or. Okay.
So let's get this straight. You
are a badass.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's, well, I was working my way
thanks
up. No, but I think in a certain sense, it's one of the things that is sometimes challenging around digital analytics. There's so many different disciplines that are part of it. And a lot of times people who are on teams of multiple things end up specializing in one aspect without growing their skill set really into some of these other spaces. I'm really curious for you, and as you look at your career and your progress through it, what's your perspective on that concept, like generalization versus specialization in terms of sort of specific skills? Do you feel that you'll go toward a specialty, or do you want to stay more of a generalist?
Oh, so we had some really great discussions recently about the concept of a full stack analyst. at The Iconic. And one of the reasons for this is that we have full stack engineers who can work across all of our platforms. And we're really toying with the idea of, should we have a full stack analyst? And I have very strong opinions about this. I definitely believe that analysts should be able to be general enough that they can do most things. But I think, particularly when I look at my role with the product team, they really want to know, how do we improve this feature? Should we pivot this feature and try this? Or like, if even if I'm working with the marketing team on this campaign and how did it perform? And you can't do a lot of that stuff if you're a real generalist. And when I say a real generalist, I mean in the Iconic definition of, like, you do financial analysis, you do customer service analysis, you do, I'm trying to think of every other data set that we have, but so unless you're really close with the team and you know what's going on with them and the features that they're building or the campaigns they're launching, the customers they're targeting, the products they're trying to sell, it can be really hard to provide good, valuable insight. And that's why I lean towards, like, you should be a bit of a generalist, that you can do most stuff or you can hack your way to most stuff. But at the end of the day, to provide really a lot of value to your team, you need to be a bit of a specialist. And that's where I see myself going. So with the, like, for example, with the tagging space, we realized my role is just kind of doing too many things. So we're actually trying to hire someone at the moment to help with that, which would be amazing. So
That was not disclosed at the beginning of the show. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, wait a minute. glad we got you on now before you are no longer relevant to this.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, but you're, so it's funny because it's asking the generalist question. I mean, there's two ways to listen to it. And from where we were just talking about kind of getting into GT, there's generalist within digital analytics, right? Mm-hmm. Where you just, everything you've talked about with kind of this is where you're focusing and trying to grow, to me says you absolutely are going towards the analysis, communication, working with the business. And then it's, oh yeah, oh, and by the way, I also own the fucking data set and have to spec out tags and learn the SDK, which you're fine with doing. And that's, to me, like, that's a benefit of being a one-person shop. I started out as a one-person shop too, and that meant I had to learn how the internet works and learn how, you know, learn what server calls are and what goes into a server log. And then, so that provides this, like, awesome foundation. And then it seems like whether you do or not, you gravitate towards, hey, I want to get into actually doing stuff with the data, but hey, I built this incredibly solid foundation because I didn't know what an SDK was. I need to learn how to read it and think through the data collection. But then you kind of brought the generalist in of, like, super generalist of, like, hey, if you've got the word analyst if there's analysis being done, financial, that seems borderline insane. Again, having some knowledge of those areas, knowing where they tie in, being able to interact with them and communicate with them. But I'm thinking about some of the teams of analysts that I work with where clearly they never went through that one-person team role. They have never learned the basics. And it is continuing to hinder them, like, throughout their career because they're trying to just be a Tableau person. It's like, Jesus Christ, like, you've got to understand how this stuff works. So it seems like it's a strong case for being I'm the owner of the data set. I'm the owner of the tag. I'm also the one who's going to be expected to use that data. But in your case, you're already, I think, figuring out where you really want, when that growth happens, you're not going to say, finally, somebody else is actually going to do the analysis. I can get back to where I'm full-time working on the tagging. But there are other people who are one-person shops who really get into that, and they gravitate towards being an implementation specialist, whether that's in a different role or it's when they expand the team. I worked with a client a couple of years ago where that had happened, where the person who was the sole owner, when they brought in the other person, that guy really just wanted to be doing Adobe Analytics, the implementation side, and was happy as could be to not, you know, to just be doing the tagging. So I think we just hit on like six different things, or I just rambled all over the place. Either way, it was interesting.
Sounds like a typical conversation with Tim.
Yeah, so now we have that recorded. Great.
I knew there was a great reason we had you on as a guest.
Yeah.
We said that seven times. Now we have it on tape.
That's excellent. Right. Well, you know, when something's true, Tim, you just got to keep saying it. So
I embrace it.
Hey.
Because I haven't been able to fight it.
There you go. Well, what else, Tim?
So it's interesting. So you kind of hinted that you guys are likely going to expand, and that's likely, it sounds like, kind of on the data data set ownership, I guess, or it's the tagging. I'm putting words in your mouth.
Yes. So we're looking to hire what we're calling a digital analytics specialist who's more on the implementation side, which will be really fantastic because I as a person, am much more passionate about sort of doing the analysis and trying to communicate it to the business. And yeah, I'm much more sort of the people focused. I find the implementation stuff interesting and I think it's super important to know. But I also think one of the reasons that I'm learning all of these different things is because I'm trying to play catch up. I'm in an industry that most people have been in for a number of years where they've had time to learn these things as they go. And I really do need to dive in the deep end and try and get my hands dirty so I can understand as much as fast as possible.
No, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, you are coming in with a, because you're experienced, right? You've got experience working, so you're not getting steamrolled. Like you can actually seem to be able to ask kind of why. But how does that? You're an organization, like you said, you've got basically the founder, you know, knows you and interacts with you regularly. You've got kind of your formal boss, you've got dotted line bosses, everybody knows what you do. You're trying to balance the work with your kind of professional development, which will ultimately support the work. So how, when everybody knows what you do, how do you kind of, what kind of challenges are there with prioritization of requests when you can have, obviously the seniority of the person to some extent, but you've got product managers, maybe the BI team, you've got your manager making requests. That seems like another, you don't have necessarily a great gatekeeper or a big pool of resources to kind of even stuff out. Hey, it's a 10 person team. So when I'm really hammered, this other person, it may be a little light. They might be able to help me out with a couple of things. How much of a challenge is that of just keeping your head above water on the requests and figuring out which ones to work on and to what extent, how deep to go on them, I guess?
Well, so the Iconic actually uses a Spotify model for our teams, which are cross-functional teams. So this actually works fantastic, again, for engineering. The place where it gets a little bit more complicated is me, and I'm sort of the oddball. And that's because while my cross-functional team is the product team, which means that I report to head of analytics for my professional development, I report to the director of product for my priorities and tasking. But that does get complicated because I also manage the digital analytics space, and that means working a lot with marketing. So I am in conflict quite a bit, and it's one of the things that as a team we're talking about right now, like how do we structure ourselves better so we can take on each other's sort of overflow? Is there a better way we could be doing things? But in terms of my sort of day-to-day priorities, the one thing that I find really, really tough is that the long-term big strategic pieces of work are the most important, but often one of the questions that I constantly get asked or I'm constantly trying to manage is something like, why did sessions per user increase this month? And, you know, can you look at it this way? And can you look at it that way? And can you apply this segment? And can you do this? Because then we think we'll have the answer. And then, you know, the product team obviously wants to hear the one answer, which is that they've launched some new feature and they were the ones that drove that metric up. And then the marketing team want to hear that it was their amazing campaign. And ultimately, a metric like that has multiple drivers in a business as big as ours. So I feel like I spend time managing that probably is wasted and could be better used on those big strategic priorities. And if anyone has any advice on that, please tweet me at MoMKiss because it's definitely something that I'm struggling with at the moment.
Well, and I guess then the other, even when being asked, how often are you finding yourself, there's a question and you could do the basic, hey, I've looked into it. There's no obvious answer. Here's the response. I can check it off. Or I could spend literally five times as long, which means instead of 2 hours, it's 10 hours. Instead of, you know, half of my morning, it's more than a day and dig way deeper. Do you find yourself kind of battling that as well? Like analysis, you could spend as long as you want on any one.
Oh, definitely.
You
could spend- definitely. And, I think that is definitely difficult at a company like the Iconic, which, like I said, I'm blessed and cursed in that our company really cares about listening to our analysts and what the numbers are and what we're recommending. But I think sometimes we do verge on caring about the numbers too much, and that actually cripples us, that there's an appetite for wanting every piece of analysis to be so perfect that we know what the answer is going to be, when at the end of the day, you're talking about the future, you're making a series of assumptions, those could be right or wrong, and it actually would have been more efficient to just turn it on, test it, and if it doesn't work, turn it off. And that's definitely, yeah, as a young company, something we're trying to balance is that what level of analysis do you go to? And I constantly am like, where do I stop? One thing that I am trying to use a little bit more, which I've written a blog on, is called an analysis of competing hypotheses, which for me is a little bit of an easier way to show to the team that, okay, this might not be like, you know, 10 weeks of analysis, but I have given it very wide thought, and you can see that by the hypotheses that I proved and disproved in my matrix.
Wait, so how does that work? I clearly missed this post.
Yes. So there's a really sort of detailed, complex version, but a really sort of quick version that I use is, if I'm trying to answer a question, I list all of the hypotheses down, and then I have a column that's evidence that proves, and I have a column that's evidence that disproves. And obviously I focus on those first. And I'll share that with the team. And then we can say, okay, we know that these three hypotheses have probably contributed to this metric going up. I'll try and quantify like how much that particular hypothesis contributed to it. But they can most importantly see that I haven't sort of missed anything, because if I have, they'll be like, oh, hey, you haven't got this hypothesis on your table. Or they can see why I've actually disproved one, which is also really useful.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's kind of a meta-analysis and listing stuff that maybe you haven't done, but rather than trying to go and do all of it, it's trying to put the options in front and do a little bit of sort of prioritization and feedback and group discussion, and hopefully making the team be a little bit more not. I feel like a lot of times, and I think this can definitely steamroll one person analytics, digital analytics teams, is if the person has a question and they know they aren't supposed to be able to get the answer to the question, they can kind of throw the question at the analyst, and then they've kind of moved that off their plate because they're waiting for the analyst to get back to them. And I don't think that's super consciously done, but I feel like it's kind of, oh, it's easy to just kind of spout stuff out. And if we spout it as we're expecting you to return it to us, and it's going to take you 2 weeks, well, then I'm absolved of having to actually spend any more thought on this business issue because I'm waiting on the analyst.
I completely agree. And I think, like, for me, I definitely work with a team that want to see every single angle of every single metric. And what I've started saying is, yep, I can do that. It's going to take this amount of time, but FYI, it means I'm not going to be able to do this other thing. And then they can make the call about whether that's a good use of resources.
Yeah, it's that commitment to prioritization, I think, that a lot of people really struggle with. And it puts people in a position where they just feel like, everything's dumped on me and I can't make any movement at all.
Until they react and they're like, now I'm just saying no to everything and nobody wants to deal with me.
Nobody wants to work with you anymore. And it's good. That's very good.
But what's the level of, kind of back to the sort of Tableau and R and your in SQL world, how often are you trying to create things that are self-service, that, okay, if you want to slice this thing 27 different ways, here's a thing where you'll be able to slice it 27 different ways for this request, the next request. Like, how much do you find that you're able to, or it makes sense to empower the marketing or the product managers to self-serve?
I think that's absolutely huge. And that is my life quest at the moment. So the product team are fantastic. They're really across Google Analytics. And often what they'll do is they'll come to me and be like, hey, Mo, I built this report. I built this segment. Can you just check for me that the logic is correct? And that's great. With Tableau, it's a little bit of a steeper learning curve. So I've created a bunch of dashboards for the relevant teams so they can go in now to the web view and like manipulate the data, apply different filters or date ranges. But I definitely do need to spend a bit more time training them as well so that they understand the full realm of possibilities that they can do with our Tableau data source, because it is so fantastic with the way that the data warehouse has been set up.
Yeah, which I think that winds up being a double-edged sword too, in that you both want to help people learn how to use data efficiently, but you also want to enable them. Like I've seen cases where somebody gets access to the data and they just disappear for like 4 days and they're slicing and dicing the data and they come back with some, you know, crazy, you know, conclusion or something like that. Although I think product is probably less, I'm not going to call out. Yeah, what the hell, I'll call it out. You're like, our product manager, I asked about marketing and product and you're like, yeah, our product guys are awesome.
No, marketing are like, too. Huh. I don't work with them as much and they use a lot of different tools.
Yeah, and I think in many cases, marketing is kind of looking at where's the traffic coming from. That's actually a little easier to be a little more formulaic, unless somebody's just got a hair up their butt that they're going to do, you know, multi-channel attribution craziness and want you to punch the magic button on that. But when it comes to traffic source and ROAS, it seems like it's a little more straightforward. But
and I do also just want to say, like, what your point just then about making sure, one, people don't get lost in the data, but two, make mistakes in it is super important because like our data set that lives in Tableau, there are a whole series of like flags that you need to apply and things that you need to know that if you don't do properly, your numbers won't be right. And it does get really difficult managing that because you obviously want to enable people, but you also want to make sure that when you go to a meeting, six people don't turn up with different numbers because they've applied different flags and then it leads to more confusion instead of less.
But it sounds like if you've got them kind of conditioned to, if they're going to make some big pronouncement, they're going to want to run it by you to say, I've done as much as I can. Can you take a look at it and see if it makes sense so they have the stamp of approval?
I absolutely hope so. I hope that that is the way forward.
We did a thing where we, and this was as a team, but where we were actually basically trying to brand the stuff that we produce. That's, we put a lot of work into our data visualization so that it was really clear to everyone that this came out of our team because it was just going to look better because we had templates and standards. And if somebody else was just slicing away with their, you know, cube and PowerPlay and dropping it into Excel, it would be kind of obvious that they had done it themselves. And that led to people would then question if somebody presented something else, they would say, have you run it by, you know, Shelley, the analyst on our team? So that turned out to work.
That's a great suggestion.
Work pretty well.
Yeah. All right, Mo, we're almost getting to the point where we've got to close, but I want to ask you one more question, which is, you know, from your vantage point, what advice would you give to someone who's just beginning their career in digital analytics?
Well, Michael, I've actually written a blog on this too. So if anyone's interested, nice, they can go read my blog.
I have a feeling we might be trying to, we might link that in our show notes. Yeah.
It'll be in the show notes, definitely.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. But please continue.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of the common advice. So read blogs, but also be careful about not getting inundated. My sister bought me a book, and I think it's because mainly she was sick of me asking her really, really silly questions to just get the basic terms that sort of stuff down. But then the place where I actually learnt the most was by building a website, because as soon as I had to do that, I was like, oh, I need to now build tags, and oh, I have a Google Analytics account I can play around in. And I actually have an intern starting in a few weeks, and he's already got a long list of things to start off on with those. So yeah, website is one of them.
I love it. And you know what? Every person I hire, I have them go tag a site of their own or make a website and go tag it. That's part of the process. So that's great. I love that. And not just because it agrees with me, but I think it's...
I think that's exactly because it agrees with you.
Well, I'm happy. I mean, obviously, it's a great coincidence. Smart people everywhere, Tim. I'm just excited that I can call myself one of their number in that particular category. Well, this has been a really good conversation. And I think it's really helpful to a lot of people who, frankly, are a lot of times underserved today in our community because they're taking on a unique challenge that a lot of us don't continue to face today. And so thank you very much, Mo, for your perspective and thought on this. And we're not finished yet, because one of the things we like to do on the show is what we call our last call, where we just go around and talk about something we've seen interesting. Doesn't have to be about necessarily analytics, but doesn't hurt if it is. What have you got for a last call, Mo?
Okay, so mine, a few of your listeners might have found and used a lot before, but it's a recent discovery to me and it's changing my life, is a lot of the resources that Jeff from Jeffalytics has posted on his webpage. he's just so great at giving you these tips and tricks to sort of save time. And like I said, I'm all about saving time and doing things faster. So at the moment, I'm kind of reading through everything that he's ever published.
Very nice. All right. Well, I'll go next. Since I've been encountering R in our work lately, one of my team was walking me through some of the very cool stuff he was doing, and he was having an opportunity to work with a very great R, I don't know what it's called. Is it a package? Yeah, package.
Package.
For yeah. Adobe Analytics, R Site Catalyst, written by Randy Zwitch and some others that have put quite a bit of effort into it. And it's, if you're using R in Adobe Analytics, it's hard to find nicer than that. In fact, it may be one of the best ways to explore the reporting API in Adobe Analytics is probably what I would say there. And then one bonus item, because this, I think if Randy were to ever listen to this show, he would appreciate the combination of this, is I've learned recently about this thing called the Millennial Whoop, which is... it's a thing that happens in music, and I don't really know why it's called a Millennial Whoop, but I think it's because it's in modern pop music because of the modulation and tone. Anyway, it's kind of silly, but it's something I learned about and I like. Okay, Tim.
So I am going, my last call is going to be the burgeoning sport of kabaddi. No, it's not going to be that, although I did just learn about it.
Great sport.
So mine, it sounds like it is. I think there are a lot of sports that would be great if they took off. So I had this when I was in Australia a little while back. There was a guy speaking at a conference I was at, and his name was Michael Yates. Works for ABC, which those in the U.S., it is not that ABC, but it is media. Is it fair, Mo, to say that the ABC is kind of like BBC?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's government funded
government media.
Yeah.
Media.
The whole point is it's open and free media without any bias, because it's doesn't have to, you know, succumb to advertisers, etc.
Ah, there you go. So it's kind of public government, but they use Snowplow, and he was talking about Snowplow and how they were setting up their event structure. And he said, yeah, we just came up with our event structure, and we were thinking that we just kind of use a noun verb connection. And that got me thinking about how much I hate Google Analytics event category action label. And I especially hate the one example that is, no matter which Google search you do, you always wind up with the same fucking video click example. So I was like, hey, that's kind of cool, this noun verb construct. So I tweeted it. And the next thing I know, I've got Nico Maselli pointing to a blog post on Seer Interactive that was about a better way of thinking about or event tracking naming strategies. And then Simo Ahava jumps in and he's like, no. Check out this post by Alex Dean, who is one of the founders of Snowplow. And it's fascinating. It's basically made me realize that the reason I hate Google Analytics event category action label is that that's not enough. And this whole concept is using grammar, the grammar of human language. And basically it's kind of like diagramming sentences, but dropping those into different buckets. And you could, it's like a mental exercise. If you thought about, if you're using GA and you just had like, I think 5 or 7 custom dimensions dedicated to subject, verb, direct object, indirect object, prepositional object, and use that in lieu of event tagging, you could have this incredibly elegant thing, which it seems like people who are using Snowplow have to sort of think through that syntax or that ontology, I think is the fancy word for it. And it just sent me on like many, many mental cycles of trying to nail a better way of tagging action that is more sliceable and kind of universally applicable, as opposed to, oh, you just have to get experienced and then you can kind of feel your way into what the best way to tag these specific actions. So there were like multiple people involved in that, but it led to a fascinating blog post on towards universal event analytics, building an event grammar.
You know, nice. Tim, when you started talking about that, I assumed you were going to go in the direction of Michael's other point that I've become obsessed with, which is people in the ABC submitting hypothesis requests instead of like a Jira tech request, which was my other thing that I absolutely loved about his presentation.
Yeah, that was, and this is like a, technically he's like an IT guy, And he just kind of got up there and politely, he'd never spoken publicly, presented publicly before, and was just like dropping. It was a Google Analytics conference. He's like, we don't really use GA. And then he was just like, oh, yeah, yeah. Here's how we manage our intake for requests. I'm like, geez, Louise. So it was pretty awesome.
And I'm writing down his name so I can, you know.
Oh, we'll link to him. He's sort of on the Twitter. I think he's a.
Yeah, not super on the Twitter, but I actually have tweeted with him. Yeah. So he does exist.
Nice. All right. Well, awesome. And as you've been listening, you may have been forming some of your own questions or thoughts, and we'd love to hear them. And what's awesome is you can find all three of us on the Measure Slack and pretty active there as well. And you can also reach out to us on our Facebook page or on Twitter, and we'd love to do that. We're getting down to one of our last episodes of the year. If you've listened to the show this year and you've liked it, we'd love it if you would rate us on iTunes as well. But it's not something that we demand of our audience, so it's completely optional.
But do please rewind the podcast before you turn it in.
That's right. Do be kind. Rewind. Anyway, Mo, a pleasure and a half to have you on the show. Thank you so much for making the time. And it's very obvious that you are someone with a great perspective on analytics. And as you grow and, you know, keep going, and it sounds like probably in the near future we'll grow past a one-person team, but your insight into this has been something I think will be a huge benefit to our listeners. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, guys.
And Tim, you are okay too.
One of these days. One of these days I'll bring
it. All right. Well, thanks. And for Tim, my co-host, and I, remember everybody, keep analyzing.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Facebook.com/Analytics Hour or at Analytics Hour on Twitter.
So smart guys want to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
You need to do your vocal warm-ups.
Me, 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 ma, 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 ma,
ma. Nice Aussie lingo thrown in there.
Hey, it's also British lingo, but, you know, whatever. If you feel I'm speaking your language, that's the important thing.
Okay, let's not say that one. That's a much more subtle reference. Much more subtle, which I didn't know Tim could do.
Subtle Tim?
Wow.
You do? You bastard. I forgot about this. You know that is a real thing, right?
The what?
The millennial whoop?
What's the millennial whoop?
Uh-huh. Maybe that's my second last call. The Katy Perry song, California Girls, right? She does this thing in the chorus where she goes, oh, 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 like that.
Your voice is always reminding me of something. I'm realizing it's Katy Perry. Your future brother-in-law was a guest on episode 14.
I have listened to that, much to my distress.
Yeah, we were here for it as well.
Wow. You still there? Wow. Yep, still here. Wow.
No, don't worry about that. Tim was supposed to jump in there and he missed his cue. No big deal.
As we all know, kisses do love to talk.
Oh, shut up. You can't use any of this.
Rock flag and tiny teams.